If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison. You know, Adam, that embarrassment I felt very keenly recently. I am in the process of prepping a shoot for a client that is a medical device company, and because they make a medical device, there are lots of regulations and rules and very serious people that make sure that they are following those rules.
Right.
And I've been on a couple of conference calls now with this client where it's just very, very boring because so many little pieces of minutiae have to be gone over. And I'm only involved in one part of a very large project, so often I'll have to listen to 45 minutes of stuff that has nothing to do with me before we get to something that I have anything to contribute to on one of
these
calls.
How many people are on these calls? Is it like one of those rat's nest conference calls?
Yeah. This is
where like someone forgets to mute their phone and you're listening to them like feed their cat or something.
Yeah, it's rough. And the other day we were on a call that went about an hour and a half. It was like it was the mother load of boring conference calls. My portion of this call, the portion for which it made any sense for me to be on the phone, was about 20 minutes at the end. And fortunately, about half the group had signed off at this point, but we're talking to a bunch of, you know, very serious professional people that work at a medical device company and a couple of colleagues at a couple of companies on the consultant side that hired me. So, you know, it's clients all the way down. And this woman at the device company has, you know, we've gone over some materials that I prepared for them, and one of the things I prepared was a YouTube video that had some clips that I thought would... I'm getting to a punchline here, but some clips.
This is one of the longer walks through a forest for us.
Some clips that we had to look at, and she said, right as we were signing off the call, you know, Ben, as I searched for that YouTube you sent, I somehow came across your Twitter, and I just wanted to extend my condolences that the failing New York Times has never mentioned your Star Trek podcast.
Ooh.
In reference to a dumb tweet that I did a couple of weeks ago. I have no idea how that came up in her. Like, I can't get to her finding that tweet in, like, the process of searching for a YouTube clip. I'm exquisitely embarrassed and in front of all of these serious people that, you know, need to take me seriously as an important contributor to the call.
You know how you can hear someone smile on the other end of a phone call?
Yeah.
Like how there's that thing that happens? Like, can you hear embarrassment? If you can't see them, I think you probably can.
Well, she could probably hear the sound of me literally crawling out of my skin. It's one of those things where it's like, you can't defend it because, like, I do have a Star Trek podcast, but that not is not necessarily evident in the joke as I wrote it. Just I wrote like a Donald Trump style tweet. The failing New York Times has failed to has never mentioned my Star Trek podcast. Very biased and unfair. Sad. And I didn't want to be like, oh, well, I do have a Star Trek podcast, and they haven't mentioned.
Do you have the relationship with this person where you can crack wise with each other, or was this totally out of nowhere?
I have never met this person.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the first time I ever talked to them.
Is it going to be awkward next time?
Oh, yeah. Come on, Adam.
Was that the end of the call? Like, okay, see ya.
Yeah. That's how it ended.
Ouch. I don't know how you can make that right.
I don't know.
I might quit the job over this. Instead of put myself in a position to face this person. Will you eventually have to face this person?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing is, you're also, like, I was so far from having heard people introduce themselves at this point that I couldn't really keep track of who I was talking to.
Yeah.
So I might be, you know,
you didn't
I might
even know who this person is.
I might be in like a hotel bar in New Delhi, India, in a month, and this person may introduce themselves to me, and that would be like the second time we interact.
You know what you need to do is chamber a Costanza style comeback, and you can start doing the research for that.
Oh,
now.
Oh yeah.
Like comb through her Twitter feed, see if she's ever quipped anything similar to that. And then you throw it right back in her face.
The first piece of research I would need to do would be find out who that was.
That's always step one, right?
I don't think there is a comeback.
She shot you.
Yeah, she really did.
You don't know who it was.
Yeah. Like, and I also don't know that there's a comeback because I do have a Star Trek podcast. There's no denying that fact. We chose not to do this anonymously. Probably a big mistake on our part.
Hey, lady, the failing New York Times called. They're not reviewing your podcast or whatever.
Whatever you do in your free time.
Yeah, the thing that you're most embarrassed about.
Serious person who probably has like an Ivy League postgraduate degree and does really important work.
The medical community, known for their sense of humor.
Yeah.
She gave you a shot and didn't even have the courtesy to numb you up.
Well, I'm like red in the face even talking about this incident, Adam. So what do you say we get on to something that I'm also embarrassed to talk about Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and turn the page to Season 5, Episode 19, The First Duty.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So, entrepreneur is going to Planet Earth, Sector 001, Adam. Because Captain Picard is going to be delivering the commencement address at Starfleet Academy. Big deal.
Who spoke at your commencement address?
So at my university, we had Wynton Marsalis, which was awesome because he said about 5 sentences and then just played trumpet for a while.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and he's like really good at playing trumpet, so it was just like, right on.
I love the whole, like, you know, I don't really communicate emotionally through my words. Instead,
yeah.
I like to use my music.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was Desmond Tutu.
No way.
And he fucking killed.
Wow.
He killed, like, in a stand-up comedy parlance. He was amazing.
That's pretty.
I loved him.
That's pretty cool.
I loved and love him. He's great. Seems like a good get Picard, right?
Yeah.
Do you think Earth people are still a little apprehensive about him and the whole Acutis thing? Like,
that's literally the last time he was at Earth, right?
Didn't go so well. their memories of him might be still pretty fresh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, that's his icebreaker? He steps up to the mic, up to the lectern, and he's like, you know, the last time I was here, I tried to kill all of you. And then he, like, pulls on his collar.
Yeah, yeah. He completely misreads the idea of starting with a joke. I feel like Picard is good enough that he can be like Louis C.K., where he like intentionally loses the audience and then gets him back.
Yeah, he digs himself out of the hole. He's good like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think he can.
It's sort of part of when you turn yourself into Lawyer Picard. That's sort of part of the deal.
Yeah. So the other thing that's going to be popping off is there's going to be a flight demonstration by a Blue Angels type thing that Wesley Crusher is in.
Wesley, the boy.
The boy.
Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
And everybody's really excited about that.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting that the idea of aerial displays are still done by people in the cockpit, right?
And there's so much autopilot in airplanes already in our time that, like, what human error could even factor in 300 or 400 years from now?
Everyone knows that the best drivers are the youngest drivers. And so what Starfleet Academy does is they staff their flight unit with these young people, including Wesley and the rest of his flight team. And there's a little bit of an oopsie during one of their most recent practices.
Yeah, so the captain gets called away from the bridge. He has to go take a private call from a blue-haired old admiral in the ready room. And she gets up on the FaceTime and she's like, listen.
There's been an accident.
And it's like, I was like, this is like a fake news, like, clickbait headline.
Yeah.
There's been an accident involving Wesley Crusher. She totally makes it sound like he's dead.
Yeah, and then we smashed a theme song. It's a little misleading.
Fucking fake news.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah. They come back from commercial, and Wes is a little busted up. Notably, he's got a fractured arm, maybe some bruising. Hurt feelings, certainly, because someone on his... one of the other pilots died.
Right. So he was he's on this team called Nova Squadron. They do, you know, close formation flying for, I guess, the Academy Air Show that is somehow happening in conjunction with the graduation. And the one cadet bought the farm in a flight accident that the other four narrowly escaped by using their emergency transporter beams. And there's a lot of hubbub about this. There's going to be, you know, a memorial service. There's going to be a hearing. They're looking into it. And the mood is really grim around Starfleet Academy, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be happy, fun graduation times. And instead, it's pretty dour.
Yeah, it's like getting caught, you know, plagiarizing your final paper right before you're supposed to graduate. Like, everything's called into question.
Except someone dies in the process of that plagiarism.
Mm-hmm. So, Wesley is acting weird, like, from jump. Like, Picard and the doctor go see him in his dorm room.
I was so worried about you.
How are you feeling, Wesley?
First door we've seen in a long time that just swings on a hinge.
And has a manual handle, a manual crank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my crank is manual, but...
Sure.
I live here in the 21st century, so...
Yeah. I mean, frequently the dorms on campus of any college are the shittiest building on campus. So I sort of get that the manual door vibes are happening here.
It's also a super tall door. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It's like a good 8-9 feet tall.
Do you think the tall door is sort of an ADA thing? Like, there are super tall aliens, so you want...
Oh,
so in
yeah.
a dorm environment, you want a tall... A door that accommodates all comers.
If there's a cadet from Mr. Hom's planet,
right.
You're going to want to accommodate that person.
Yeah, totally.
Well...
If that's the case, do you think they have they have a knee toilet. Like, sort of like how when you go to some countries, you get a toilet and a bidet. At Starfleet Academy, you get a toilet and a knee toilet.
You mean for that type of alien that Kirk kicks in the knee in Undiscovered Country?
Yeah.
I don't think those guys are in Starfleet.
Yeah, they're pretty bad dudes. They're bad hombres.
Yeah they're bad hombres. The arm is not the only thing on Wesley that has been badly injured, Adam. He also has maybe the worst haircut we have ever seen on the program.
Oof. It's the truth. I mean, he has the most severe Star Trek sideburns maybe we've seen on the show. That quality is shared by all of the Academy people that we see in this episode. But he also has, like, was this ever a thing when you were growing up? Like, the shaved sides and the longer top that would sort of drape over those shaved sides?
Wes's sides aren't shaved, it's just the back.
It's like he shaved the back of his neck halfway up his head.
It's an undercut in all the wrong places.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because so often in this episode we see him in a one-quarter shot over his shoulder, and it's just in full relief.
It's so fucking bad.
Yeah.
Wesley is in no mood to talk to you, the captain and his mommy, so... He kicks them out, and in comes the guy that is the leader of his squadron. And there's kind of the ominous, like, we got to get our story straight, buddy, kind of conversation.
Yeah, and especially when it's right off the heels of Wesley kicking Picard and his mother out of his dorm room.
Will you excuse us, please? Nick and I have some things we need to talk about.
In sort of a strange way, that sort of bang bang really underscores that there's some shit going down.
So I think this is about when we get Picard wandering around the grounds of Starfleet Academy. He's like out on the quad, and he comes upon a very old man. And this is an old man that he established in description when Wesley was, like, leaving for the Academy. This is Boothby, the groundskeeper of Starfleet Academy, who is, like, for some reason, incredibly important to Patrick Stewart's character. And I think winds up being important to Benjamin Sisko and Captain Janeway also. Like, for some reason, he's the guy that ties all of the captains together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like Sisko fucking loves him some Boothby, and I'm pretty sure Janeway does too.
If you want to be a credible Starfleet captain, does your career have to go through Boothby?
I think, yeah, like he's like the guy that you need to know.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know that you need to know that guy. He never takes any of the credit, but he's a kingmaker.
Okay, this is the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
I really like the concept of making people in insignificant roles significant to people who go on to do great things. Mm-hmm. Like, in a perfect future scenario, you would expect Starfleet people to hang out with Starfleet people and turn into career Starfleet people, and then that is, like, sort of their homogenous social and professional circle. But
right. Well, we have this, like, I mean, like, we live in a society with very stratified class structure.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to, like, think outside of that.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess if there's no money in the future, like, there's nothing, like, Boothby doesn't necessarily have a lower status than Picard, you know? In a weird way, like, they're kind of co-equal. If Boothby is, like, doing his thing at the height of his ability, then, like, And also, like, Boothby never caused a Wolf 359 or anything like that. So in a lot of ways, he's, like, a better person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you made my point for me. It's just, there's no difference between them. They're both doing the things that they excel at in completely mm-hmm. different areas and helping each other in the process.
So there's some kind of oblique talk in this scene about some bad thing that Picard did when he was in school. Got in trouble, got over it.
Yeah, the idea is that Boothby knows. Like, Boothby may only be the groundskeeper, but he's got his finger on the pulse of everything that happens on Academy grounds. And so Picard hits him up for intel on Nova Squadron, and he doesn't really answer the question entirely, but he's like, yeah, Nova Squadron's the shit. Everyone looks at them as gods. But he sort of trails off at the end, like, but they have some issues. And then they sort of pivot into Picard's relationship with Boothby and how maybe he didn't have a super squeaky clean Academy experience either.
Right. So Boothby's given him something to chew on, and also just like giving him a little trip down memory lane. So we cut to the like inquiry situation, and the deal is they've got this old lady admiral, the blue hair, and like a super rumpled Vulcan captain looking into what went wrong in this flight maneuver, and the like four surviving members of Nova Squadron are essentially like there in the hot seat.
You also have the deceased father.
Right.
Who has some real resting grief face going on.
He really does. He's like cast for his ability to transmit grief without speaking much.
He looks like he has just seen the video from The Ring and and just carries that vibe throughout.
Yeah. So a couple things I wanted to talk about with this scene. One is, why Nova Squadron so white?
Mm.
Why is everybody in this episode white?
They're not only white, but like the most Homo sapien. Like the one person who has a little bit of nose bridge loaf is clearly like half human, half loaf. You know, like yeah. Like it's not a strong genetic disposition toward alien.
She's got a dab of Bajoran in her
right.
in her lineage, but
not enough
mostly
to wear the earring.
Yeah, I think that even the Germans could look past this loaf.
Yeah, you're easily getting through American customs right now. Just breezing on through.
Mm-hmm. They don't even bring up the loaf.
No.
And what's the purpose of your loaf? Yeah, it's...
Do you have any plants, animals, or loaf in your checked luggage?
You only need to declare loaf worth more than $10,000. It's just a lily white episode, Adam. Like, they made zero effort to depict Starfleet Academy as being anything but a rich white people place.
That's tough, because anytime they have to cast a large number of people, for instance, on Alt Biosphere... Like, most of the extras were white. In this episode, it's just as white in the background.
It's maybe whiter.
Yeah.
Like, it's weirdly homogenous. Like, kind of, it's upsettingly homogenous, I will even say.
Starfleet Academy is in San Francisco. One of the diverse cities in the world. Well, growing less diverse all the time, I should say.
Yeah, but this is maybe we're on the trajectory for this to become the reality. Like the rich white people in San Francisco are kicking everybody out, and they will build Starfleet Academy.
They'll build it right in the Tenderloin.
Well, so this is like the first hearing, and it's like it's pretty like contentious because there's like a lot of missing information, but they're getting the team on record with what their story is.
Yeah.
And their story is like, we were doing the thing that our flight plan said, and we probably should have said, but the guy that bought the farm has been having, he's been getting nervous during training. Is it named Joshua?
Yeah. He's been listening to a lot of Elliot Smith and... and like college rock music.
Yeah. Like when we go to parties, like he doesn't even party, like he'll just play his acoustic off in the corner.
He doesn't want to hang out in the kitchen with the rest of us.
Yeah.
And Picard cannot resist involving himself in this investigation, right? Like people are getting deposed, people are going on the record. he asks the two-pip admiral, like, do you need any of my help? You got the flagship here. The admiral's like, nah, that's good. We got it. Picard goes back up to engineering and talks to Geordi and Data, and he's like,
Wesley's one of our own.
Understood, sir. We'll get right on it.
Oh, I can't wait to help. They're having a trial down there. I gotta be a part of it. Let's dig up some evidence.
Let's find some bullets and do some ballistics on them.
Yeah.
So Geordi and Data like embark on the project of trying to figure out what the F happened. And you smash cut to like this secret meeting in Wesley's dorm room, which is very nicely appointed, by the way, with Robert Duncan McNeil and the other Lily White members of Nova Squadron, like, colluding, essentially, to continue deceiving the Board of Inquiry.
Right.
We all agreed not to lie to them. I didn't lie. Everything I said was the truth. The accident was not Josh's fault.
Where are all the posters that are supposed to be up in Wesley's dorm room?
Yeah, he should have, like, an ironic Secret of the Ooze poster. Probably an unironic Usual Suspects poster.
A really shitty record collection.
Yeah, like half of them he took from the record library at the college radio station.
Yeah.
Without really asking.
Yeah.
But nobody's really looking for them either.
No. Yeah, it's as plain Jane as his condo was on the Enterprise.
It's almost as plain Jane as Data's condo, so.
Yeah.
That gives you an idea.
Clearly they're alluding to the conspiracy amongst themselves to cover up whatever happened. And the viewer at this point still does not know exactly what they are covering up, only that they are attempting to do so.
Right. And what comes down from the squad leader played by Robert Duncan McNeil is just like, knock it off with offering any more information. Don't, you know, they don't have any evidence that they can used to incriminate us, so as long as we just keep saying what we've been saying and stick to the party line, we're good. We're coasting. And so Wesley walks out of here like just, you know, with a pit in his stomach, and who should want to meet up with him but the commander who's the father of the kid that bought the farm. And he pulls like maybe the most emotionally fraught move on Wesley that he possibly can, which is, my son borrowed your Coogee sweater. He would have wanted you to have it.
It still smells like him. I can't bear to have it around. It smells like that really shitty cologne that everyone wears in college because they don't know how to wear cologne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they put way too much on.
Yeah. It smells like CK1. You know, you only need to shoot a little bit into the air, Ben, and then walk through it.
Yeah, you know, you don't want anybody to be able to smell it unless you are making out with them.
Yes.
I had a roommate who used to use Axe body spray, and he would put so much on that I would be in the other room with the door closed, and it would make me sneeze. Like, I would start sneezing, and I'd be like, why the fuck am I sneezing? And then it would, like, register what was going on. So much Axe body spray. Oh, my God.
So gross.
Wesley kind of has Axe body spray of haircuts.
He does.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
He and Joshua's dad trade a couple of personal moments. His dad's like, you know, he really loved being on this team with you. And Wes is like, yeah, we all really liked him too. And there's like that tension, like the tension of the cover-up has permeated this conversation with the dad. Like, he can't turn the corner on being fully emotional with him because it's taking all of his resources to keep the wall up on the cover-up, right? It feels like to betray any depth of feeling about Joshua to his dad would mean the dam breaking and the resistance falling and then him not being able to hold it together. That's how I felt.
Yeah. A tough scene. Like great subtext in this scene. And I thought Will Wheaton did a really nice job with it, you know? Like, almost everything that is happening in this scene is not in the script.
And that's when the show is the best, when they put it in the hands of the actors and they allow them to create in the room, which is good.
Yeah. So I think the next scene is they show the, like, the black box recording from Wesley's cockpit, which cuts out well before the accident. It was weirdly taped on VHS. I think that's strange that they would go back to that technology this far in the future, but, you know, who am I to call into question the choices that Starfleet makes in designing its cockpit recorders? There's a lot of VHS clips in this episode. Did you notice that?
Yeah, there are. This isn't the first piece of footage that they show. What's the angle on this?
It's like over the top of the back of the head.
Yeah, it's weird that it's like interior, right?
Yeah.
Like it feels like an exterior camera would be more useful.
Well, they always want to know if like the pilots were doing rails of cocaine or something right before the shit hit the fan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be weird if you're a pilot, right? Like you've got to kind of mind your P's and Q's because everything you're saying is being recorded and could potentially be the last thing anybody hears from you.
Yeah. You ever listen to any of that? Any airline crash black box tape stuff?
No effing way.
That is, as a airplane enthusiast, something that I have made the mistake of doing once or twice over the years. And that's some heavy stuff, man. I don't recommend it.
No. I'm not that smart, Adam, but I know enough that I will never do that.
Well, I'm really interested in what happens when incidents happen on commercial airplanes. And, you know, for a small fraction of them, that stuff is public record. Like during the investigation, they'll diagram stuff and they'll do wireframe video of what happens to the plane. And then occasionally they'll include that black box audio. And that's not fun times.
No, that's haunting stuff.
You look like Joshua's dad listening to stuff like that.
This is the scene where Wesley kind of describes what they were trying to do, Adam, and what they were doing before the accident, Adam, was called a Jaeger loop.
Perhaps you could call it the Kozinski scale.
Is that a natural Jaeger?
Surely you're not saying it's unexplainable.
You'd have to ask Biff himself what that is. And I can only hope it's something positional.
I miss talking about Biff Jaeger, Adam.
Yeah.
I feel like we used to talk about Biff Jaeger a lot more on this podcast.
Yeah, he deserves to remain a prominent part of our show.
Make the Greatest Generation great again.
It's just hard when you're only in 8 episodes in season 1. To carry that through. Like, I get that.
I don't even think he's in 8. Yeah. Is he in 8?
I think he's in 3.
He's in 3 max.
If we can make Kevin...
We talk about Uxbridge a lot more than we talk about Jaeger, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if we can make Uxbridge a through line for our show, we can keep Jaeger's memory alive.
Yeah. Well, the Jaeger loop is the last thing that Nova Squadron will cop to having done. And, the rumpled Vulcan and the blue-haired Admiral are like, well, it's too bad we don't have any other information. Oh, wait!
We happen to have this grainy convenience store footage from a 7-Eleven on one of Saturn's moons. And then he pops the VHS tape into the top loader VHS player that they have on the desk.
And it's an episode of Night Court. And he's like, oh, fuck, sorry. That is not the right tape.
Yeah, and there's some fun lawyering here because the Vulcan prosecutor does that, or the Vulcan investigator does that thing where he's like, Mr. Crusher, what is this? How would you describe this maneuver? And it is very clearly not the Jaeger loop maneuver that we have been told about previously. Yeah.
It's they do a good job of kind of getting the audience acquainted with the physical relationships between the airplanes that they're discussing here.
Yeah.
And so this like ends pretty inconclusively, right? It's just that they know that like that there's some contravening evidence.
Yeah, they're all doing that thing where I can't explain what that is or what that footage is supposed to be. That doesn't look like anything to me, is basically what they say.
Yeah, I can't remember what we were doing there.
Yeah.
So this really precipitates shit turning against Wesley. And I think Data and Geordi like tell Picard about how, you know, the telemetry from the flight recorder about what was going on in the ship sort of implies that there was some strange stuff going on. And that's how Picard puts it together, that they were in fact trying to do this other move called the
Colvord Starburst,
which is a flavor that we don't have in our time. You know, right now we're limited to lemon, orange, cherry, and strawberry, right?
Right. Yeah. There's, I think if you go to Thailand or like Hawaii,
Japan,
the Colvord fruit is very popular there. And so that's a candy that you'd only be able to get at their convenience stores.
Yeah. I feel like all that stuff comes from Japan and they just have better and more interesting candy flavors than we do.
Yeah, they really do. We're missing out.
I just wonder how those companies can make any money with, they have so many SKUs and they're like serving the Japanese public and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like really complicated to be able to, you know, build a supply chain around something like that.
Well, if Starburst could make a fried chicken sandwich flavor Starburst, that's what they would do, because that's what Americans crave. Like,
right.
you're not gonna get truck stop people in Idaho buying Lilikoi flavored Hi-Chews, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a tough sell for those types of people.
So, on the heels of this new evidence, Wes gets called into the principal's office, the principal being Picard. And this is a more formal meeting than they typically have in the ready room, isn't it?
This is basically Picard telling Wesley, you need to cop to your shit right now because you're in big trouble, young man.
They are not friendly in this scene. They are two professionals having a professional conversation.
Mm-hmm. And Wesley kind of sticks to his guns, you know, like the leader character. What's his name? Locarno.
Yeah.
The leader of the squad really has Wesley and the other two girls wrapped around his pinky finger and has him dancing to his rhythm. So when Picard presents Wesley with this new finding, Wesley is not inclined to cop to anything.
I choose not to answer, sir.
And this really causes Picard to flip out on him. Like, Picard goes full, you know, disciplinarian headmaster, and he embarks on this speech about how the first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth.
Would that include the scientific truth?
Right, or like historical truth, for example.
Right.
Or personal truth.
Yeah.
It like seemed really familiar to me. I couldn't remember where I'd heard it before.
There are two parts of this scene that like that really blew me away. The first was like the moment that Wes indicates that he's not going to play ball with Picard was mm-hmm. like, oh shit. Like the first time you see a kid talk back to a teacher when you're young, you're like, oh my mm-hmm. God, I didn't know you could do that. Like there's that kind of chill. But then Picard just goes full big dog on Wes in a way that you never see him do to anyone.
They foreshadow it a little bit when Wesley walks in and Picard is first confronting him with this new information. They go to an extreme close-up on Picard's face.
Yeah.
And it's like he is so dominant in the frame, and then when they reverse to Wesley, he's like, you know, at least
he's cowboy.
Yeah, it's like a cowboy shot, and it's like it makes Picard look 10 times the size of Wesley.
That's a good call. Yeah, the compositional choices help enforce that.
Yeah. And like I think even in Wesley's shot, it's like a dirty single. Like Picard is also in that shot. It's like Picard is dominating the whole fucking scene.
Yeah, there's not a shot without him in it, and it serves to underscore that Wes is boxed in. The end of their conversation leads to a point where Picard says, "If you don't cop to it, I will cop to it for you. So make the right decision."
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurseth the disease.
And so they have like the final hearing, and they get almost all the way through it. Like I think they've even like officially adjourned the hearing with Wesley having sat there with marbles in his mouth, and then like everybody's like about to stand up, and he's like, "I have one more thing to add." And
yeah, like they smacked the bell gavel, like they're going to get off the hook.
Is that like a naval version of a gavel? Is that what that's from?
It seems that way. Yeah.
If you get court-martialed in the Navy, do they use that?
If only we had a way to find out, Ben.
Well, we don't, because we are a no-research program.
Indeed. Indeed. And that only serves to make Wesley's choice even more pronounced. Like, he is on the cusp of skating, and he does not allow the skate. He goes right into the wall of the skating rink on this one.
Well, it's the right move, though, because this thing concludes with everybody skating, and they would all just be, everybody would be suspicious of them forever.
Yeah.
You know? And in this scene, in coming clean, he kind of forces the hand of Locarno. Locarno, in an off-camera scene, goes and, like, throws himself on the mercy of the Board of Inquiry. He manages to keep everybody but himself in the academy. Like, they were going to kick everybody out, but he's the only one that gets kicked out. Wesley's going to have to, like, earn his Spanish 2 credit all over again, but, you know, he's got, like, some blemish on his permanent record, but what's a permanent record? That's only something in school, right?
A permanent record only matters to someone who exists in space and time, which soon won't be a problem for young Wesley Crusher.
Yeah, that's a good point, Adam.
They had the good sense in that courtroom scene at the end to not do the four shot reverse shots between Picard and Wesley, like, as they come to the end of the trial, like, and you don't get Picard about to get up out of his seat. And what that does is it characterizes Wesley's act as more brave instead of blackmail, you know?
Right. Yeah, he's not moved to stand up because he realizes that he's about to get burned.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows that's coming one way or the other, but it's not like I think he could have done that in private later, and he chooses to do it in the public for him, you know.
Yeah,
sunlight's the best disinfectant.
The restraint of how that went down at the end I thought was good.
Yeah, it's a very well-directed episode, I think.
Yeah.
It's not as flashy as a Frakes, but it does a nice job.
Hmm. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I sure did. I thought it was a pretty cool choice to bring back this character and bring him back in a way where it's not all fun and games, and it's also not a, you know, after school special. Like, it's not about how bad drugs are.
Mm-hmm.
It's they're not throwing him any fun moves like getting to make out with Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
It's like a heavy episode without being a cheesy episode.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's more universal to have the message be about how hard it is to tell the truth sometimes than drugs are bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like the truth part is important for everyone. And it can be extremely difficult to say a difficult truth the way that Wesley has to here.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, when someone dies, like, holy shit, that's the worst thing. And it's a buddy. And they're all at fault.
This is a buddy that was close enough to lend a very expensive Coogee sweater to.
So you know they were close. There's a scene in this episode that I really liked, and it was between Beverly and Wes, where Bev is like, look, I really think that we can help your case. You know, a lot of this isn't making sense. I think we have the full support of the Enterprise crew to really dig into the evidence and make it stronger for your side. And Wes over and over again has to tell her that she can't involve herself. And, you know, in that moment, she finally realizes that things are so much worse than she realizes.
Yeah.
About what's happened here. And they don't revisit the consequence of that later, which felt a little bit missing to me. What you get instead is the scene in the ready room between Picard and Wes, but the fallout mm-hmm. between Wes and his mom is not revisited. And
yeah,
it seems like
shame.
That moment had just as many stakes because, mm-hmm. I mean, Wes is the golden boy.
She believes in him so much.
Yeah, the golden boy, her only son, her only significant family member, to have disappointed her in this way must just be earth-shaking. But we don't get that.
Yeah. I would say that the one big, big problem I have with this episode is that they hired David Duke to be the casting director. I think that's a shame, you know?
Yeah, a short-lived job for him.
Mm-hmm. It's very not hard to do way better.
Yep.
It's seriously fucking not a big deal to be way, way better about being inclusive.
Yeah, it's not like they're shooting this in North Dakota.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, it's set in San Francisco, not Anchorage.
Right. Yeah. Do you want to check the voicemail messages?
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have two personal priority one messages this episode. And the first one is from Plavim. And it is for Raz. Message goes like this. This is a way better use of $100 than that crappy strip club in Fort Lauderdale. Though we did catch a lot of tuna. Oh, Plavim. That's...
That...
Come on, man. That's not a nice thing to say.
Give me a break. Well, the second prayer horn message is from Plavim. And it is to Raz.
Wait, what?
I'm noticing that the Raz that the first one was to was only with one Z, but the Raz in the second one here is with two Zs, so maybe a different Raz. Who knows? Let's see what it says. It says, wait, it was Miami Beach, not Fort Lauderdale. Anyway, the strippers at Tony's bachelor party did dirtier stuff, and that's where you told me about this podcast.
Wow.
Oh. Wow.
You're hanging around with some dudes. There's stripping happening.
There's a couple of fellas from the Thunder from Down Under show up.
Yeah.
Start taking their pants off.
And that's a good time to discuss your favorite podcast. That's nice.
I like these Chippendale dancers aside, Plavim, I have a great recommendation in podcasts for you.
Oh, man. What do you think is the best stripping song to play while talking about a Star Trek podcast?
Jeez. I think Cherry Pie, like, it just seems so fun.
That is a fun song.
Yeah.
And a fun message. I think what these two messages do is it underscores all the strange ways that people find out about our show.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's, like, literally a situation that I cannot imagine. Like, the only things I've ever done in Florida are travel there for work, so that's already pretty difficult for me to imagine, like, recreating in Florida. And you add nude men on top of that, and I've never experienced anything like that.
Oh, you're saying men because of the tuna thing, right? You're throwing that back at them?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay.
I will brook no glancing misogyny on this podcast that we don't accidentally do ourselves.
Sure. I have been to Fort Lauderdale for work. Not a great time, I would say. I would say in the recreational aspect. God, it was so fucking hot, though. Jesus.
Yeah.
I think it was June. And, like, I could not have been sweatier. I don't think I've ever been sweatier than that. It's gotta make the work of a stripper especially difficult.
I gotta look at our download numbers and see if we're ever gonna need to go do tour appearances in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh yeah, so I mean, if our numbers are super high in FTL, then I think I might want to delete that for our friends in beautiful Fort Lauderdale, a place I've always loved.
Yeah, one of the greats. One of the great American cities.
Well, if you would like to share your podcast origin story with the world.
If you would like to tuck a couple of scarves into the G-strings that Adam and I are wearing.
Then going to a safe for work website is the way to do that. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are for $200. It is no joke. That is a significant way that we are able to fund the ongoing production of this program, and we really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
You want to come over here and jiggle me that drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
Shake my Isolinear chip maker.
Yeah.
I gotta give it to the Vulcan captain. There's a scene, like in the scene right at the end when Wesley is moved to stand up and cop to everything. He says, when he says the phrase that when he admits that they were attempting a starburst, it's like a tight shot on the admiral, but you can see the Vulcan captain in the background, and I think he was supposed to be nodding like the truth comes out, but the way it reads in the take that they used is, oh yeah.
Oh no. That's not the tone.
That's not the tone, dude. And it's like a fine performance otherwise, but I noticed it and it really made me laugh. How about yourself, Adam? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
There were just a number of visual delights this episode when it comes to world building Starfleet Academy. That was like the most fun part of this episode to me. And one of the things that was seared into my eyeballs was the idea that Academy uniforms include cargo pants.
Yeah.
And holy shit, like, when was the last time you wore cargo pants?
About the time that this episode came out, probably.
That's what I'm saying. I argued with myself a lot once I saw these on screen. I was like, the future has no place for cargo pants. And yet, their undeniable utility makes a lot of sense. Like, in a future that maybe puts less of an emphasis on looking cool and more of an emphasis on utility, like, I understand the cargo pants comeback, especially in an academy environment. So,
well, That said, Adam, this cadet uniform, while it is not really the same as the uniform that they transitioned to in Deep Space Nine, it is every bit the crime of dumpiness that uniform is. And it's like the cargo pant is the dumpiest of pants, you know?
It's like they made a decision, like, we're not going to have an on-set gym around here. Like, there will be no sub 5,000 calorie lunches at our craft services table. Like, no way. Yeah. Like, they're like, we are going to make our actors as comfortable as possible at the expense of looking good. And that's just how it is.
And those cargo pockets are all jam-packed with tater tots. Like, that's why they're sticking out so much.
They are not lay-flat cargo pockets, for sure.
No, this isn't like the cargo pocket on a 1997 era dress pant.
Yeah, they're sort of teased out, like so much hair.
Full of tots, Adam. Full of tots. Damok and Jalad at
Tanagra. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. Recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
So the next episode is Season 5, Episode 20, Cost of Living, preparing for her wedding aboard the Enterprise. Oh, no. Troy's free-thinking mother. Oh, no, Adam. I thought this was next season. Troy's free-thinking mother causes trouble between Worf and his son. Oh, no.
This is the moment.
What have I done?
This is the moment this season where you're looking way down the road and you see a car kind of weaving in the distance, and it's getting closer and closer, and you think you're going to miss it, but it plows right into you, Ben.
Oh.
Our viewers wrote us. When we counter-vetoed each other early on.
It doesn't have a fucking troik. It doesn't have a troy pun, Adam. How could I have known?
Yeah. Yeah. Hiding in plain sight. A Loxana episode.
Fuck. The purloined Loxana. One of my favorite Edgar Allan Poe short stories.
Is that the story where there's some boobs buried under the floor and they're like they're just getting louder and louder?
You're thinking of the Telltale Hom.
That was great.
The studio audience really appreciated that one.
Well, we have to watch this, Ben.
Fuck. This was maybe the most vetoable episode of all episodes in the entire series.
When people talk about the episodes they hate, this is one of two episodes that make that list every time. The tops of those lists.
Yeah. This is a Mount Armus episode. Fuck. Can we, like, just veto it anyways? That's not the rules.
Yeah, but of course we make up our own rules. I don't think we can. I think we should try to record it, and if we just can't get through it, maybe we bail.
We put it on.
Maybe we bail and we talk about Crimson Tide instead.
You know I like talking about Crimson Tide, Adam.
Yeah, a submarine movie inside of a Loxana Troy episode. That's how you hide a submarine. It's not a Caterpillar drive, Ben. You put it inside of a bad Next Gen episode. That's how you sneak past the Russians.
Well, that's some version of what we just said will be our next episode.
One way our viewers are not being sneaky at all is by chatting us up on the Twitter using the hashtag #GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR. Our viewership is also super chatty over on Facebook. We've got a group and a page over there, and we've got a couple of really great Reddit pages also. r/GreatestGen being one of them, and the official r/MaximumFun Reddit page.
Good times all around on all of those things.
We've got merch to buy, Ben. We still have Drunk Shimoda glasses. Got a couple of great t-shirts out there. We're coming up with new merch ideas all the time. The Goose, Adam Ragusea, beds a bunch of our bits with his original music. And of course our main theme music and interstitial music is produced by the wonderful Dark Materia.
Yeah, search for Dark Materia online, and you can find other fun Trek-related stuff as well.
Max Fun Con's coming up. I bought my tickets, Ben. I'm going to both.
I'm going to both also.
Nice. Maybe I'll see you there.
Maybe I'll see you there.
Maybe we'll get too drunk again.
That would be terrific.
Hey, let's plan on really tying one on this time. Not like last time. We'll do better.
You want to take a page from the Matt Howey playbook?
Friend of the program, Matt Howey. I can only hope to drink as much as my friend Matt Howey. He's got a tremendous thirst.
Yeah, as I think you called it before, Matt Howey, when he goes to Greatest Gen Con, is truly on nerd Rumspringer.
Yeah. As most people are. Highly recommend going to Max FunCon, everyone.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next week. Another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that really is fucking unbelievable that we are doing. I feel like such a dope. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.